Welcome to Season 7, Episode 17 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday the 23rd of July, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website or in the #UUPCIRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week is, well, there's a notable absence in the form of Alan Pope, who isn't with us this week. Please don't all stop listening right now. But Laura is here.
Hello.
And joining us from his sick bed is Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello. It's actually a sofa.
A sick sofa.
Ew.
That sounds... it's sick, mate.
It still sounds absolutely disgusting.
But thank you for putting in the commitment.
Yeah,
well,
we do.
You know, I'd hate to let down my adoring fans.
Yeah, we do appreciate the effort that you've put in by coming here off your sick furniture.
Something like that. I'm pretty much better now in any case.
Okay.
Good, good. Well, you put in more effort than Alan has anyway.
Absolutely.
To join us remotely.
Splitter.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get on with the news.
And now it's time for the news. Following a recent public consultation into document formats, the UK government has announced that it is to standardise on the open document format for sharing and collaborating on government documents.
Ah, interesting. So this is following some sort of consultation, is it?
Yeah, there was an online thing on the Cabinet Office's Standards Hub website where people were invited to give their thoughts on how the document formats used by the government affected people in their interactions with the government and so on, and how it affected the opportunities for cost savings and things like that. And quite a few people pitched in and said, we like open document format. And someone from Microsoft pitched in and said, no, you should say you can have multiple formats because that's better. Yes.
And what did the consultation say other than just ODF? Is there any room for anything like Microsoft Word format?
No, it's ODF for documents which are to be edited and all collaborated on, and PDF or HTML for stuff which is read-only.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting. And PDF's often been given as a standard over the last few years anyway. So
yes.
Having ODF and PDF together, it's effing wonderful.
So, yeah, there's a few quotes in the announcement on the gov.uk site. One from Francis Maude, who's the Minister for the Cabinet Office, who said that they listened to those who told us that open standards would reduce their costs and make it easier to work with the government. So a lot of this is about the fact that you don't have to buy a particular product to be able to use ODF. And there was also a really good quote from an IT manager of a charity who provided some feedback in the consultation process, who said, it makes sense to receive government document in ODF because it makes it possible to install up-to-date software on all computers.
So you're not interesting.
You're not tied to, say, the Microsoft Office lifecycle. Or
the Lotus Notes lifecycle.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Because, see, with something like LibreOffice, you can just keep it up-to-date as releases come out. You don't have to worry about, you know, the... like upgrading and buying licenses for a new version, which is the same but with subtle upgrade and so on.
Yeah, because there's two problems with, say, having multiple formats. One is that, like you say about the Microsoft format, they're not always backwards compatible with each other, let alone with other applications. But also, I mean, even with the best effort in filters in the world, stuff that's been written in Microsoft Office doesn't render properly usually if it's got anything more complex than basic headings. And it is a bit of a pain if everybody's passing whichever format they want around.
Yes. And yeah, I mean, it is also the potential that it would go the other way if someone was trying to work. Well, I mean, you can work in ODF in Microsoft Office if you've already got Microsoft Office. But yes, having multiple formats, if someone was editing something in ODF and then decided that they were going to save it in Book X, then that might mess up how it looked in the first place.
Remind me which versions of Office support open document format.
I don't use Microsoft Office myself, but I mean, I think there's been a plugin to support it since whatever the version before 2013 was.
2010.
2010. I think there was a plugin for it in 2010.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I imagine that 365 must have it built in by now, surely. I don't know. I don't use it, I'm afraid.
Okay, well, all right. We got that
you
message.
You can import it into Google Docs as well.
Yes.
Yes, yes. That I have done before. And that's, well, it works okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit weird when you import a spreadsheet, though, because it only gives you the number of cells that you have occupied in the spreadsheet into Google Docs. So if you have, I don't know, 4 columns and 12 rows in a spreadsheet, that's all you get. And you have to add in, you know, insert columns to something more useful.
Oh, yeah. Right. I see.
But, you know, that's a minor thing, really. It's fine. So good news on the open standards front there for ODF.
Yeah.
And a presentation scheduled for the Black Hat Security Conference on Tor has been cancelled by the host institution's legal counsel. The presentation was reported to describe how flaws in Tor, which is the onion router, could be used to find the location of hidden services and users on the network. So yeah. Tor is this thing where it's a big... You route your traffic through it, or some traffic, network traffic through it. It bounces around between dozens or hundreds of servers, each of which only knows one or two links in the chain, and then eventually it spits out wherever you want it to go. So
yeah,
it makes
there's also multiple layers of encryption as well added and removed each.
So it makes it node. Almost impossible for somebody to intercept your traffic and work out what you're doing, which is important for privacy people, and people who care about that particularly, but also, I suppose, could be put to nefarious purposes. So Roger Dingledine, which is a fantastic name, of the Tor project, has stated that they did not request that the talk was cancelled. Some of the findings to be presented in the talk have been informally shared with the Tor project.
Hmm.
So, go on, Mark.
there was the actual abstract for the talk has now been removed. So, but there was a bit of sort of talk about what it had said it was going to talk about, whereby essentially if you had about $3,000 worth of equipment and a few months to just monitor the network, then you could essentially work out who was using it. And also, so part of the network is a user can send their traffic over it, and you can't, if you're receiving the traffic, you can't tell where it's come from. And if you see the traffic going in, you can't tell where it's going.
Right.
Or if you see traffic coming through, you can't tell where it's going or where it's come from. But there's also this concept of hidden services, which is where you can have like a website running through Tor where you can know how to access it, but you don't know where it's actually hosted. So this vulnerability would also apparently allow you to work out where a hidden service was hosted.
Right, okay. So what sort of websites would we be talking about here?
Well, I've never accessed any myself, but the only example I can think of comes from Cory Doctorow's books, Little Brother in Homeland, where they're hosting sort of like WikiLeaks style sort of documents on this site so that people in the know can access them without the person who holds these documents being known to certain authorities who might want to stop these getting out, because if they can't find out where it's hosted, they can't take it down.
Right, okay, yeah, I'm with you.
And otherwise people who just might want to use Tor could be people who are, say, in within a regime which censors their internet, and they want to be able to talk to people outside of the, say, China, for example. They might want to be able to talk to people outside the Great Firewall without being detected, so going through Tor is a way for them to do that.
Okay, interesting. I mean, it seems like Tor is a technology that's been around for a while, and it's interesting if it's getting some attention now from people who are trying to exploit it. I suppose, you know, it prevents other agencies from getting there first.
Yes, and, you know, it also is good to be aware that these things aren't perfect. I mean, it's come out recently, of course, through Heartbleed and things like that. Just because these things are there and they've been around for a while, it doesn't mean they're flawless. So it's good to actually have someone there taking a critical view of these things, which, you know, people assume are very good and very solid, and, you know, addressing the concerns that they might not be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella has announced that there are going to be 18,000 job cuts across the company, which is the biggest in Microsoft's history. and they'll include half of the 25,000 employees gained through the acquisition of Nokia.
Yes. So. They said they're going to scale down the operations of Nokia in one of its sites in Finland, which is
great.
Great for Finnish national pride. Their big company is going down by the sound of it.
Yeah, well, the big company's already been sold, so I guess it's not really theirs anymore, is it?
Yeah, I suppose so.
But how does this fit with Microsoft's strategy? Presumably they want to sell more phones. So
it sounds like that their strategy is going more toward being a sort of servers and cloud services type provider now. Because it was Steve Ballmer who was really big on the let's have our own iPhone type thing, which, you know, I mean, I don't see that many people with Windows phones, and I see a lot of people with iPhones, so I'm not sure that's going so well for them.
Yeah.
But then I do know a lot of people who, a lot of, you know, companies and institutions that do run Windows servers and do use things like Microsoft Office 365 thingy and so on. So that
thingy
and Windows Azure. Sorry, I assume, no, I think that's the right name. I say thingy to cover myself in case I'm giving it the wrong branding.
Okay.
I was about to say SkyDrive as well, but I think that's called something else now.
Oh, I think it is. Maybe. As well, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so apparently just ceasing all production of Android devices.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Which I'd forgotten that they did.
Well, yeah, because there was just this weird little announcement not long ago that Nokia were going to do an Android smartphone.
Oh, yeah.
We commented on it at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're not now.
Apparently they're not now.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if it even got to a proof of concept handset or something.
I can't actually remember what we saw at the time, whether they actually had a phone to show off or whether they were just talking about the concept.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think it was just saying we're going to build this thing. I don't think there was much to show off. But yes, so I mean it's interesting, isn't it? Because the whole email that Stephen Elop sent out saying we're going to be making all these tens of thousands of people redundant was sort of pitched as a really positive message about consolidation and leveraging your brand synergies and all this sort of stuff. And then about two lines from the end, it said, and in order to do this, we are going to be getting rid of 10,000 people from here and 15,000 people from there or whatever it was.
Didn't he use the term right-sizing?
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. Oh. I saw that was quite near the middle of the email. I just saw that. I thought, oh, that's just... Yeah, I'm sure all the people who are going to be right-sized to the Dole office are going to be thrilled by that.
Yes.
But it's okay because the US employees won't have to worry about the offshoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I did notice that there's a big list of the territories where they're being cut back and the US doesn't appear to be one of them.
Yeah.
Interesting times for Microsoft.
Yes. Telecoms industry watchdog Ofcom has found that the vast majority of new UK broadband customers chose not to enable the on-by-default content filters introduced in response to government pressure.
Surely it's not default if it's...
Well, if it's, you it's you're presented it. You're presented with a choice, but the default where you have to say, I agree to these filters, but the default choice you're presented with is, you know, naughty things are blocked for a given definition of naughty, depending on which provider you're with
and
where they get their filters from.
Yeah, I logged into my BT account to check my latest bill. Actually, it was just today. I had the email notification come around saying your BT bill is due. Logged into it, and there was this thing: do you wish to enable these filters? And the yes, I would like to is a big green button on the pop-up window, and the no, don't is a plain text little link sort of off to one side.
It's really subtle psychology they've applied there.
Right.
Sign up to our newsletter. No, give me the download. Kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that was
donate to Ubuntu. But yeah, so they had a sort of roundup of the statistics, and around 95% of customers from BT, Virgin Media, and Sky opted out of the filters. So that's about 5% of each have decided to keep them. But by comparison, TalkTalk have a much lower opt out rate they still have the 65% majority of people opting out. But it would be interesting to to actually see how the different companies present the option and whether that's actually, or you know, how they explain what it is and whether that's sort of providing a nudge for people to choose one way or the other.
Yeah. So are these the same filters that we talked about previously where Alan's found they were blocking all sorts of things that they shouldn't have done? So these are those filters. Okay.
These are those filters, yes.
Yeah. Well, and blocking lots of people's personal websites because, you know, they might have said the word bottom on there or something.
Quite, yeah. Or, you know, they might discuss certain issues which are lumped in with something else which is quote-unquote bad.
Yeah.
Discussion of the issues themselves might be very valuable.
Indeed, yes.
And in fact, so that what we talked about last time was blocked.org.uk, which is a website by the Open Rights Group, and they've just launched a new one called departmentofdirty.co.uk, which is a really interesting sort of, it's sort of slightly satirical, but also quite serious about, you know, the arguments for and against blocking and the approach that's being taken and how it might be improved.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, so I got the email this morning and I was skimming through and I was like, that looks like spam, and deleted it. And it was only when people were on Twitter later talking about it, I was like, ooh, okay. Mm. So I've not actually read it yet, but I saw there was a video about something that looked quite amusing.
Yeah, well, interesting to see how few people are really adopting those filters.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if this is how this is used, whether it's going to be, well, people obviously don't want these filters, so let's not do them, or let's not, you know, mandate them so strongly, or whether it's going to be, well, people obviously don't know what's good for them, we should be stronger about making them compulsory.
Yeah.
I hope it's not the latter.
Hmm.
Well, in other silly law news, the MPs Tom Watson from the Labour Party and David Davis of the Conservative Party have given the Home Office 7 days' notice. They're going to seek a judicial review of the Data Retention and Investigatory Powers, the DRIP Act. I think Liberty, the organisation, is acting on their behalf to take it to court.
Yes.
The whole DRIP thing.
Yeah, so this was rushed through as sort of emergency legislation in the last few days of the Parliament before they all broke up for their very long summer holidays. Yeah. And
do you remember that emergency? That was really, really scary, wasn't it?
I was going to say nobody was quite sure what the emergency was.
The emergency was that they found out in April that the European Court of was it European Court of Justice? Basically said what you're doing is wrong, and so they needed to pass some legislation to make it all legal again. Even though it's still now questionable whether it's legal.
Yes. I don't fully understand this, because they were saying what we've been doing has been deemed illegal, so we need to pass a law so that it's legal again.
But I didn't understand that.
So it basically exempts you from bits of European legislation.
Oh, okay. So they said the European Court of Justice said this is illegal according to European law, and so we passed the law saying
we're
going to ignore that part of European law and keep doing it anyway.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. So David Davis is very into libertarianism and doesn't like anything that takes control over anything. And Tom Watson, sort of completely the other end of the political scale, but he's all about civil censorship and that kind of thing.
Yeah, civil liberties.
Civil liberties and things. And so their interests have crossed.
Yes, it's really good to actually see an issue like this being taken part, taken up by people on both sides of of the house.
It's not
as it were.
A political thing then.
Yeah, and also the really real objection I had to it was that it's just being, you know, it's apparently really important piece of legislation. It's apparently really important that we're able to do this, but let's not debate it too much, because otherwise, you know, we might realise that we don't want it. And that's, you know, it's a bit insulting. It's insulting to the people who are voting on it, and it's insulting to the people who voted for them.
And one of the points that Tom Watson makes is just that you have to draft these things properly so that they're not misinterpreted, and so that you think of what all the consequences are of what you're writing, and they've just not got the chance to do that.
Yeah, and civil servants, whoever drafted the law, obviously spent, you know, 2 or 3 months doing it, and then Parliament doesn't get time to review it properly. Although, as we've seen in the past, lots of MPs don't understand the technical bits of the legislation and are prey to the sort of scare stories that you see
yeah.
In the press, but you know, takes a few to question a few points.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's about all we've got time for.
Oh, we except do have gaming news.
Oh, I'm sure we've only got about a minute left to...
That's plenty.
Is it talk about gaming news?
Yep.
Okay, well,
We're to overrun.
I'll be quick. I'll fit it in the next minute or so. So the very famous graphics company, NVIDIA. No. I think you'll find it's pronounced NVIDIA. They've announced the Shield tablet, which is an Android-powered device, which is going to be focused on gaming. The Shield features an 8-inch screen, but can also be connected to a TV. Native Android games are supported, but PC games can also be streamed to the device from a compatible NVIDIA graphics card at near-console quality, whatever that may mean. The tablet is designed to be paired with a specially designed controller. The two devices together cost upwards of £280.
Every bit of information you added to that reduced the value of it being a tablet.
Yeah, I don't understand. They're saying, yeah, it's the ideal tablet for gamers, but surely gamers, it sounds like that they've already, if they're going to buy one of these, they've already got all the gaming machines they want.
Yeah.
So why would they want an expensive tablet to essentially act as a very... Well, it's kind of like a Miracast.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah, I was thinking
that. It takes the games from their PC and sends them to the TV screen.
Yeah.
Or they can play them on the tablet if they're on Wi-Fi in their house where their gaming PC is.
Yes.
Although it did actually get me thinking about uses of Miracast, and it occurred to me that it's actually... bringing it back to Ubuntu, amazingly, for this podcast. Looking at convergence, Miracast is actually a really handy technology for that, because it allows you to do, you know, moving your app to a screen at a different form factor,
yes,
without having to plug it in or have a special dock or something. You can just beam it across your Wi-Fi, which I thought was quite a nice idea.
Like our networked clock.
Yes, quite
just
a lot
like that.
Which I should probably change now, as we're done with the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you. So go on, do your duty, keep calm and compose an email.
And now it's time for some community news.
Excellent. What's up?
Ubuntu 13.10, which I believe is Saucy Salamander.
Yes, it is.
Has reached its end of life on July the 17th.
This is very quick.
Yes.
9 months is the new support life cycle for non-LTS releases.
Wow. Yeah.
Which means now, currently, the only supported versions of Ubuntu are LTS releases.
12.04 and 14.04.
Yes, and I believe a really old server version as well.
Oh, possibly, right.
Because they used to have different life cycles, but now they're the same.
10.04 is server. 5 years. Five years on the server.
Until next year.
Yeah. So this seems really quick, because essentially it means if you're on 13.10 and you haven't upgraded the only available upgrade path to 14.04, you're now out of support, which is exactly what's happened with the laptop that we used to stream this show. when I turned it on, an update alert popped up saying this is no longer supported. You must upgrade to get security updates. And I thought, huh? Because normally I don't upgrade it during the season. Because it risks there being breakage to the software. If I want to continue to get security updates, I'm going to have to be a bit risky. Or I might just leave it. But so 9 months is not very long, really. Because there's 6 months between releases, it only gives you 3 months to upgrade to the next version. I don't know how you feel about that.
I just stay on the LTS.
Yeah, I do tend to use anything that I care about being stable, I leave on LTS releases, and anything I don't, I upgrade as soon as the next release is out anyway. So it's not really a problem I ever come across.
Yeah, Yeah.
So if for example, if I had a machine which I was relying on being stable to do a podcast, for example, I would keep that on LTS.
Yeah, Tony.
Well, yeah, there's a good reason why I upgrade to other releases, which is mainly to do with support for other bits of software. Maybe an LTS release is probably okay now, actually, if we get to a stable platform. But yes. So in other news, good news for the Empire. Ubuntu has now been fully translated into British English. This was announced
in no small part to one Mr. Alan Pope.
Yes, it was announced with some pomp and circumstance on Twitter by Alan Pope that this had been achieved. So well done, everybody who's contributed to that. I think you know, he's probably putting a flag in some mountain now with the Ubuntu logo on it.
It's an ASCII art flag in a header file somewhere.
Yeah. So yeah, nice work, everybody. It means we actually have a native translation of our distro.
Yep. And finally, Microsoft has joined the Convergence community, and they've announced their intention to produce a single Windows OS to run on all devices. And this was announced on, well, it was on the BBC News website today. And they made the point in the BBC News article that this would now bring them into line with other OS manufacturers like Canonical.
Hey.
So I was like, woo!
Yeah, well, catch up, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Get on the Ubuntu bandwagon.
Because a couple of months ago they started talking about convergent apps and how you'd be able to write an app which would then run on Windows desktops, phones and tablets. But now they've actually said, oh, actually, the OS is going to be the same OS.
Oh, right. Interesting. Yeah. Same UI, presumably.
Well, yeah, I guess it'll be, well, one would imagine it's similar. Because, I mean, you sort of have a similar UI at the moment with the whole Tiley thing.
Yeah.
As long as you don't want to use the desktop, it's the same UI. So that can scale quite happily on different form factors.
Yeah, it's the whole responsive design thing, isn't it? Because, yes, I mean, that's absolutely what Ubuntu's doing. They've got the different ones that are optimized for the different devices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and we've got some event news.
We do. We have one big event news.
it's the only event we've talked about this season, I think.
Yeah, pretty
well,
much.
No one else has told us about any events. Please do. If you'd like us to talk about your event in this topic, segment.
Email us at podcasts@ubuntu-uk.org.
Okay,
but back to our camp, the Odd Camp segment. on the 4th and 5th of October... at the Oxford Hotel in Oxford, UK. We've got OggCamp, which is a free culture and conference. It's not just about the sound format, just to make that clear.
It's not.
So free culture, what's that include?
Creative Commons, podcasting, music, open source software.
Open hardware.
Arty crafty things.
Yeah, we made bags
DIY
last time.
DIY type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, making bags out of t-shirts, printing stuff.
3D printers.
Minecraft cranes.
Yeah, basically anything that's fun, isn't it?
Tea, coffee and cake.
Anything that's geeky and can be sort of reasonably fitted within the bracket of freedom and culture and so on.
Yeah.
And we have a raffle and we have parties and we're... Everyone there is really nice.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's all quite amusing. It's a jolly good show.
Yeah. It's the fifth year now, this Odd Camp, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. So basically, you can go to oggcamp.org to find out more information and get some tickets. The tickets are free, although you can choose to donate some money if you would like to.
I did.
And well done. And that means
that... Sixth year.
Sixth, is it? 2009.
No, fifth
Wolverhampton.
Yeah. 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. He's not wrong.
Yeah, but it says fifth on the website.
No, it says 5 years.
5 years.
Oh, 5 years.
It's the sixth Odd Camp. Fence post error.
Yeah.
That's one for the Lug Radio fans. So,
or programmers.
Yeah.
We have some sponsors to thank who are very kindly supporting the Odd Camp event and allowing it to happen and to allowing us to let people in for free.
Who are they?
Ubuntu, supported by Canonical.
Yay!
And the Odd Camp community through Pay What You Want ticket donations.
Hooray. Like me.
Hooray!
And yeah, that's yeah, loads of people. It's brilliant.
Yes.
It's amazing to see people so happy to support the event.
Fantastic.
And we have a new sponsor to announce this week.
Ooh,
hang on.
If you're, if you're a regular listener to the show, you may be familiar with these guys. It's Linux Voice.
Yay!
So we interviewed Graham Morrison for Linux Voice a few episodes ago, didn't we?
Yes.
It's the sort of crowdfunded Linux magazine that's actually available in the shops.
Mm.
Yes, actually available in the shops, and they, they're very keen on giving back to the community through investing their profits back into community projects and also into the magazine itself rather than to shareholders, and also releasing their content under Creative Commons licenses 9 months after it's published, and in a lot of cases quite sooner after it's published. They do quite a lot of stuff on their website for free not long after it it's available in print.
And they do a podcast as well.
And it's a really good podcast.
Cool.
Excellent. So check, check that all out. Ogcamp.org. That's all for this episode, which has been episode 17. We'll be back next week when we will be interviewing Graham Binns from the Mars project at Canonical. What else? We've got a command line love, and we've got some feedback as well, I think.
A little
feedback. Okay. Alan still won't be here, but hopefully Mark will be fully recovered by next week. we'll see you then. Cheers then. Bye-bye.
Bye.